Good morning, everyone. I'm Patrick from Required Magic. It's a bit of extended housekeeping to be done before we start the rest of the event. And I need this is a six minute presentation. So even though I can hardly see you, could everyone raise your hands if you've heard of a cardiac arrest? Okay, not bad, not bad. Probably, hopefully not because of me. Who's heard of a heart attack? Come on, come on. That's it. How many of you think it's the same thing? The audience is pre-prepared. So because they're not the same thing. They're definitely not the same thing. It globally claims more lives than all those conditions put together. And cardiac arrest, sudden cardiac arrest, strikes without warning and no apparent reason. And physical fitness has nothing to do with it. So very recently at the Euros, Christian Eriksen collapsed with a sudden cardiac arrest. More recently than that, there was a 13-year-old boy who collapsed and died on the football pitch in the UK. The common element is not that they were both playing football, by the way. And of course, recently, a presenter at OpenSUSEcon 2019 collapsed mid-presentation. Any guesses? By the time this presentation is over, three people will be dead in the US because of cardiac arrest. Now think about that. It's three people in the US or six people in the entire EU every 6 minutes. And it's a real problem, but it's a lot. There's not so much education about it. So if you see someone drop dead or just fall over, you need to check to see if there's a pulse. If there isn't a pulse, you need to start doing the CPR, the old cardiac massage, immediately if there's no pulse. And don't stop until you're told by a medical expert or a doctor or an ambulance worker. And don't worry, this is the best thing, don't worry if you hear cracking ribs. You can't do bad CPR, because the alternative is the person dies. And by the way, it's not Hollywood. CPR could take half an hour or more. The idea of CPR is to get the heart pumping blood to the brain, oxygenated blood to the brain. No CPR is way worse than bad CPR. Find an AED, which is a portable automated defibrillator. There's one of them in this building. There's one in many public places, and use it. It's automated. It tells you what to do, and if you start using it, again, this is not Hollywood. 20 shocks is or more is not uncommon. So survival is possible. I mean, on the bright side, it sounds like a negative topic, but your actions can save a life. And people don't just drop dead. It's usually a sudden cardiac arrest. CPR is essential. Don't stop until, and don't find someone else to do it. Do it yourself if there's no one handy, because you've got 6 minutes before brain damage starts occurring. The heart feeds the oxygenated blood to the brain, and your actions stimulate the heartbeat, forcing blood flow to the brain. And it's only 6 minutes before things start shutting down on the brain. So, simple summary. Dial 99 or whatever your relevant emergency code is. Start CPR and find an AED. If you're the only person there, start CPR and call someone to find an AED and call the emergency number. One thing that I didn't know, didn't know any of this a couple of years ago, but one thing I definitely didn't know, which would have been very handy, is every single mobile phone has got an emergency function. That emergency function is just a bit of data you put in there about your medications, your any diseases you've got, and most importantly, contact numbers of people that you would like to be informed of in the case of a collapse. I'm not sure if you can actually. No, this laser's not. No, didn't want to do that. Sorry. Let's go back to this. All right, so. So these every phone's got this emergency function there. Take some notes, some moments now or very, very soon to just put all that information into your phone, because you might not have heard of the existence of that, but every other emergency service worker looks for it, and everyone who's looking after you is looking for it. And if there's nothing there, it makes it a lot more difficult to get to the right person. So if you have to render assistance to someone, check their mobile, inform the appropriate people, but not before you've done everything else, so you can make a difference and actually allow someone to live. So that's it. I dedicate this to the people who saved my life almost exactly 3 years ago in this place, and you all know who you are. One more thing, the emergency the exits are well labelled and there is an AED on site, so let's get on with the show. So as I was saying, 3 years ago, now where did I don't know what I was doing then, but I certainly now know that I'm talking about rolling out Linux using something called Carpet. I started this presentation back in 2019, but I wasn't quite able to finish it. Now, Doug mentioned that there's some people found the topic interesting, and I thought, what, me? Interesting? What? Okay, so I'm back after 2 years of COVID and other things to talk about rolling out Carpet and Linux on just about anything, anywhere. A bit about me. Problem solver since 1974, that's when I first got my collection of Lego. Later than that, I was working in film, physical special effects, wind, rain, fire, all those kind of things. On IMDb, you could actually find my name, but it's an actor who's kind of purloined all the work that I did. I can't be bothered to fix that. So I'm a special effects technician, not an actor, and I was worked on something like 20 different programs. But what I found fairly recently, actually, I realised that a lot of the things that working in film have in common with technology, it's a lot of problem solving. Now I started programming on a Challenger 4P with 8K of RAM, which is just nuts, but then moved on to work in film. And what we do, what iLayer and Required Magic, which is the second company, iLayer or Innovation Layer is a consultancy and also an MSP managing cloud services in London, in Zurich. I have staff in South Africa and London and Germany with me here. During one of the consulting requirements engagements, we needed to work on a homegrown deployment scheme, which led to me developing Carpet. But let's go back to film for a moment. This is a classic line that makes producers of films very, very nervous. Because when the script says something like that, that's called the $1 million sentence. And that's because you don't know what the director is going to do with it when he reads it. And how is he going to interpret it? It could be something as simple as an actor picks up a newspaper and seeing a headline or a photograph. Or it might be Saving Private Ryan. with the entire basis of the film, millions and millions of dollars in special effects work. Similarly, let's deploy a new OS. It has the a lot of the same things. It's, I mean, if you think about that previous slide, the same things apply here. So you've got justification. The question is why? The cost, the logistics, the manpower, and at the end of the day, what are the results? And these are all the kind of things that we probably have all suffered with and had thrown back at us whenever we've decided to, we try to deploy Linux on multiple systems. They're the kind of answers, the questions that get asked. So essentially, it's the huh, the what, and the why, and the how. And of course, the cost. Which is why we started working on a project. And Carpet, which was formerly known as a Snoopier, I didn't know and didn't like the name either, but I thought Carpet was much better. It remotely deploys Linux using Wake on LAN, Pixie Boot, and the native installer. It's not an imaging tool. So it's not an image tool. It's not a dumbing imaging tool, or even a smart one. You can deploy images, and we'll see that actually happening a bit later on. Though the best experience is having the native Linux installer using some pre-seed files to install the Linux on the machine in a native fashion. It's more reliable that way because it does the hardware detection. One thing it's not is a cure of cancer, unless you think Windows is a cancer, in which case it is. So we can deploy workstations, we can deploy digital signage and kiosks, we can do deployment over a WAN with virtual machines, WAN images or WAN installations over narrow bandwidth. Things like, the big one is at the moment is automotive systems. Internet of Things is another possibility. But anywhere you want Linux, you can deploy it using our system. So the things we need, the requirements, is obviously a network, but you don't need to worry about a low bandwidth endpoint network. Closed network environments also are fine if you're willing to install a couple of servers. Pixie Boot is a requirement for the hardware to be able to load the remote installer. Wake on LAN is also very nice because you can just send a packet, wake up the system, and it can get installed. That's not a necessity. And of course, DHCP, which you think is common and a lot of places, it isn't. Even large organizations like universities. So we did this work with Allied Irish Bank. There's a case study available. We're looking after 7,500 Linux desktops using a command line tool that they'd written. That's across 900 branches. That were updating every system on roughly a bi-weekly basis. An estate which was from 2004. And we did all this with zero site visits. We never went to a single branch. And these are the systems that the bank tellers would use when they're interacting with you, with the customer. So if you think about the cost to deploy a new system or even like a brand new laptop or desktop system, you really need to think about how long it's going to take in man hours. And for example, with the previous example with Allied Irish Bank, if we're to do, if we, well, they actually had to do this when they retired the equipment, these systems that we're looking after, but it would take 2.3 years to roll out 7,500 workstations with a team of eight. And that's kind of a bit sobering when you start doing the math. And that's averaging two machines a day, which might be low, but then again, you start thinking about project management and travel to each of the site, and et cetera, et cetera. But imagine if your workstations are single board computers locked in more or less inaccessible telecom cabinets. You're going to want to have a level of automation. I'm not sure how many 5G systems are going to be, or 5G masts are going to be deployed across countries, but it's a lot. So with Allied Irish Bank, we did 7,500 desktops, 900 branches, and we did it with two people. We inherited their deployment system, and our original ask was to remote replacement with one brand of Linux with another for disk and RAM reasons because of the age of the equipment, and they didn't want to spend the money building the or sending people out to replace the hardware. So as much as we all want to see Linux on the desktop, we just thought, well, that was great, but no one really wants it. We've tried. And then another bank called, and they wanted 20,000 desktops in the UK alone. We're called simply because the vendor of the Linux vendor said, pointed the bank at us and said, you know, talk to them, these guys have done it for another bank. But usually it's a large user account in dispersed locations, and they're usually using either a web system, a monolithic application in Java, because they do single tasks. They don't do, they're not running Office, or they're not running, they just have things such as just the tank bank teller application. So with this new plan, customer, we thought, well, we can't use the old Perl scripts, mainly because I don't read Perl, and I don't want to ever read Perl. But the whole idea of a Pixie boot to install, to do the scripted install, was something quite interesting. They were AIB were using LDAP for the management of the systems. But instead of having a CLI, we wanted to have a graphical front end and do some interesting things with that, because we could see the potential of the system. So we built it. It all kind of worked, a bit of a mess. And that's because the scope of what we're trying to do is huge. It's multiple servers on the client side. It's at least a minimum of four. With no redundancy, double that if you want a much higher reliability level. Weeks and weeks of consulting time, and that really limits the potential of, you know, you need to go to massive organizations to get to that point. So we needed to re-architect, and mainly because the physical server requirements are too big, or the local area network needed too many virtual machines. So we cut that down to one, and we moved a lot of the operations to cloud, and that reduced the installation consulting time to a couple of days, which is bad for the consulting side, but it's also good because you've got a much larger customer base. Now, one of the key things is this use of LDAP or Active Directory. Which I'll get to shortly, but so we're using Django. We used a Django plugin, which now allows for multi-tenant Postgres. So it's a single database with multiple tenants built into it, all of which are secure against each other. There's a secure virtual machine we put inside that creates a VPN to our cloud instance, NQTT, you name it. At the end of the day, every single system is connected to Active Directory if that's what the customer wants, or LDAP for management, for both by us and also by the their user base. Which is where we get to the point where we start talking about Kiwi, and I'd love to use a pointer, but not too, it's not bright enough. But essentially, the way Kiwi works is you build a virtual machine just from, or you build a system image from simply an XML description file, and you overlay it with whatever files you want at the time where it's all combined. And then you can define the version or the hypervisor, in our case, and just deliver it. And we were basically templating that on a per-customer basis. So the client would get a pre-built system. There was almost no configuration to be done. And the XML file looks like that. And I think I've just discussed that. I mean, the description files are easy to template and manipulate. And it takes about 20, in our systems, takes about 20 minutes to build a system. That's what it looks like at the moment, more or less. We've got a few things such as it gets the nodes from LDAP, it gets the organizational units from LDAP, and injects it into our database. Gives you various statistics about how many things are up and down. It kind of works like this, but that's not really very helpful. So essentially what happens is the client device boots in a Pixie mode, and then it asks for a DHCP address. DHCP address supplies it, gives it an IP address and some other information. That extra information tells the client who to talk to for further boot information. So the Pixie app says, "Hey, I'm MAC address. You know, what have you got for me?" And usually there's a file that just gives the information. What we do is combine the LDAP information that we have on file or in the database with its MAC address and go, "Oh, that MAC address that belongs to that workstation." And that workstation is part of this group. So this group gets this XML file, if it's SUSE or a text file, which is for Red Hat and Ubuntu, that deploys that particular system remotely onto that workstation. And in Active Directory, very fuzzy, but here you've got the folder, the OU inside Active Directory, and by taking one of those systems over there, you drag and drop it into the appropriate folder, and next time the machine is restarted, it becomes the identity of what you want that system to look like. So if you just want a basic Red Hat or SUSE or Ubuntu system, you just drag one of those systems into there. If you've got wake on LAN enabled on the systems, you can actually press a wake on button, a wake button, it wakes it up and installs it. But there are still lots of problems, mainly to do with there's a lot of front-loaded complexity. Even though we tried to build a system that was, the client will download it based on a bunch of information that were provided, it took too long to install. One of the biggest problems that we've come across is the identity, the virtualization, the network, and the end user compute teams they don't want to talk to each other. In fact, in AIB, when we're on our way out, we ended up with one of those teams was from a third-party network provider. That was the network. Virtualization team was in-house. End user compute teams were a different third-party supplier. and identity was also in house. So all these people, trying to get them all in front of in the same room at the same time is actually really difficult, and that will probably be the biggest problem you'd face. So apart from that previous statement about trying to solve the issues of complexity, I was setting up an online bank account, and I was amazed by how simple what is essentially a fairly complex operation has become on this web banking scenario. So I thought, well, if we can get a lot of the questions can be asked, a lot of the questions we thought we needed initially to get things set up could wait till after. So we had this a web interface to build the system. And then after the system is complete, then there'll be a wizard, and it just defines the basic setup. Which is also when we discovered something called Cage, which was featured at a previous OpenSUSE event. That is it's a kiosk app that has, it's a single desktop app, so a window manager. And so if your app was a web browser, then you can use that. And we thought of that in regard to the console that people are faced with on our system, because that's kind of a lot of people are not used to working with the Linux command line. Windows admins get quite scared of it, so we thought we'd replace that normal console with a simple web browser running Cage, which is very low footprint in terms of disk and memory. We could have it's much friendlier, and with simple web-based actions to fix problems, and also push messages to the browser if you're making it available over the LAN. Of course, if you're connected to the internet, you can't do web push messages, but that's life. So some of the things we've done with it, it kind of makes possible. It makes almost anything possible. You've got a lot of hardware. You've got a network connecting them. What do you want to deploy onto it? If you want to be this is one example. So, and we're doing this for a customer at the moment. So we boot a memory resident kernel and run Cage. We run Cage, and then on top of that we run Vert Viewer. And the Vert Viewer instance connects to a virtual machine which happens to be running Windows 7. Because of the pass-through abilities of KVM and the Vert Viewer, we can plug a USB key into it, and it can be recognized, a UE key can be recognized in the virtual machine. And that was something that our clients really quite like. So this is a bit of an example. You might be thinking, it's a big deal. It allows you to virtualize anything, even client systems. You can store the images where it makes sense to do so, close to the edge or centralized, or on a combination of both. This is just sort of to show you that it is actually running Windows, running Linux, because the next thing you'll see is a Windows setup screen. Now, I'm not advocating you set up Windows ever, anyway. But it does mean that you can run anything anywhere. It's almost limitless, the possibilities. So some of the tools we've used to do this, the tools we've developed to make all this possible. There's a Carpet Sync server, and that's an all-in-one VM, which is the thing that's installed on the customer side. It provides Pixie Boot, Wake on a LAN, MQTT, and more features. I think there's also a... I can't remember the name of the... It does everything, essentially. We've got some predefined images that we can deploy over Pixie that does things like the Inspector app, or the Inspector image. It runs in RAM only. It collects all the information from the hardware using something like DMI decode or whatever it might be, sends it using MQTT up to the server, and the server stores it all in the database. So you've actually then got an audit of all the machines. And then once it's done, it just reboots the system and it goes back to its original operating system. Doesn't touch the hard disk at all, which is perfect, especially if you've got a Wake on LAN environment already deployed with Pixie Boot. You can just put this in the Pixie Boot server and you can get all this information. There's something else called Floorboard, which is something you saw previously in that previous slide. And that is just the base level of Pixie Bootable image that will do anything you want to do. So in the case that I've just shown you, it's running a Vert Viewer instance on Cage. It could be running a Cage with a web browser, so you've got a kiosk running using the system, or you could have it running a web browser that is pointed at Microsoft 365 or whatever internal application you might have. And it also provides SPICE accelerated front end to the KVM virtual machine, if that's what you're using. We developed something called Carpet Sync, which is actually the application that the Sync server uses. It integrates, there's an MQTT server inside the virtual machine. It talks to that. It looks at, sends requests and responses in terms of, are there any centralized calendar events that need to be run on these particular machines? It's the thing that sits inside the local area network and sends Wake on LAN messages, etc. So then there's Carpet Agent, which is an optional thing. It's not really required, but it's handy to have it running on a deployed workstation. So then you get constant updates as to the health of the system. Again, using MQTT. So the interesting tools we've encountered during the construction of this project, of course, there's Kiwi. It's an OpenSUSE project. We've been using it to build a whole lot of VMs and Pixie Bootable images and even physical machines. It's really good. Noitka, which a lot of people might not have heard of, it's a Python compiler which deconstructs the Python that's given, turns it into C, and then compiles it as C. Increases the speed of Python by about, I've heard, about 500%. And it also, it generates, you don't need the Python interpreter. It builds all that into the binary. And it binary images, or it's like monolithic binary image or with libraries. And you can just install that on anything. And we use that for the Carpet Agent and the Carpet Sync server. And Cage, which we've already discussed previously, that's the kiosk compositor for Wayland. And that's very good as well. Needs a bit of love, but it's a really good system. Now Django, I'm not sure how many of you have heard of it or used it. It's a fantastic web development platform. We've used it since 0.8. It's now 4 and 5. Django with the multi-tenant app. It turns your single database into a multi-tenanted, full-on just an amazing piece of code where you can have certain tables that are shared and some of them are private to different, for different customers. And MQTT, which is a great message queuing protocol. The server that we use is Mosquito MQ, and that's web sockets capable. So the one of the slides I showed you before, a lot of the information was being driven by web sockets real time. And if you're running the agent, it reports back to the local server via the MQ server. And that's about it. I'm a bit ahead of time. Has anyone got any questions? I guess not. Well, I've made Doug very happy because I'm ahead of time, not behind. So that's the QR code if anyone wants more information. And that's it. Thank you.